spent struggling with the burden of past traumas and finding it difficult to move forward, join us right now as we explore the transformative power of radical forgiveness to address this very thing.
Raw, uncut, and unapologetic. Welcome to Men Talking Mindfulness.
Hey, welcome back to another enlightening episode of Men Talking Mindfulness. I'm retired Navy SEAL John McCaskill, and I'm here with my co-host, renowned New York City yoga teacher, Will Schneider. And today we're going to get into a profound topic on radical forgiveness with our guest, JP DeLange. JP, you know what? I don't even think I ever checked if that's how you pronounce your last name, which I'm terrible. Is it DeLange?
I'd be called a lot worse. It's DeLange.
Oh, man, I knew it. I knew it. As soon as I read that name, I was like, oh, crap. And JP came to our retreat last year, and I should know better. But anyhow, JP DeLange.
Way to go, John. Way to go, John.
I know, right? Hey, we are all uncut and unapologetic. Anyway, JP is a man who spent 30 years serving in uniform in the military, and he sustained multiple unseen wounds, including PTSI. And that's what a lot of the world calls PTSD. I call it PTSI because I truly feel that it is an injury. And JP is going to offer invaluable insights into how we can free ourselves from the shackles of past traumas and find true healing and liberation through forgiveness. But before we do that, we're going to do a couple of announcements. One announcement, hey, you know, simply text MTM to 33777 to see everything that we're doing, including our live virtual meditation course that starts later this month, actually starts next week, April 9th,
and
our in-person retreat in Colorado next month, May 16th through the 19th. And you can find out about all that stuff simply by texting MTM to 33777. Also, real quick, I want to give a shout out to a fellow podcast. It's the Harder Not Smarter podcast with fellow former Navy SEAL Kevin Seif and former Green Beret Greg Van Dyne. You got to give it a listen, support them, and then start living a better life all at the same time. All right, now I'm going to turn over Will, my brother from another mother. How are you, man? Good to see you.
I was like, I was good. I was checking out for a moment. Sorry. I was like, right here. I'm like being present, you know, during your own show. Anyways,
it does help.
I was writing next to, you know, our text at 33777 that we will not spam you. So I was working on the show show is going on right now. But hey, I'm good. We had a great time attending the LA conference on podcasting last week. So we're super continually more inspired just to bring all of you, and really excited to have JP here today and to bring all of you just more great content that can help you live a happier, harmonious, and easier life. So, and healthier for sure. We're just going to do one grounding breath. That's all you really need just to kind of like hit reset. And we're going to start with a nice big exhale out your mouth. Close your eyes if you like. As you exhale. Get all the way empty, 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 empty. Good, good. We're going to take a big inhale. 7, 6, keep going. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hold it. Take a little sniff at the top. And exhale out nice and easy. And exhaling right into this moment by grounding through your spine, into your feet, your sit bones. Just be here now, as Ram Dass would say. Awesome, everybody. JP, thanks for being part of our show. JP came on our retreat last September, was it? So he's like a veteran.
Oh, look at that hat. Rocking the men talking mindfulness.
And the full Men Talking Mindfulness experience on our retreat. So JP, great to have you today. And thank you for wearing our hat for sure.
So great to be here. And look, this retreat that you put on last year was a game changer for me. And I would really recommend to anyone to meet you guys in person. That was one of the highlights for me. But, you know, in terms of stretching my body into positions I didn't know I could still do, and meditating and learning more about mindfulness, what a rewarding experience that was. Yeah. And we need a lot more of that, especially in these days. So amen. Thank you for putting that on last year. I'm really looking forward to seeing you in Colorado Springs this year, and can't wait to see what's in store.
Same here, brother. Same here.
Excellent. Yeah, glad to hear it, JP. Yeah, John.
Yeah, definitely glad you're here. And thank you for that plug, man. So real quick, let's jump in just to get a little bit of a backstory. If you could briefly share with our listeners a bit of your personal journey with post-traumatic stress and how, ironically almost, how it led to your path of radical forgiveness.
Yeah, great question, John. And it's not a straight line. You know, as many people who have enjoyed the kinds of success that we have can attest to, the road to success is often a crooked line of peaks and valleys. And that was my journey toward radical forgiveness and my diagnosis of PTSD. My relationship with PTSD is really relatively young. I turned 65 this year, and I was diagnosed only about 7 years ago when I was 58. And incidentally, you had Major General Greg Martin on, I think it was around the 21st of February. I listened to that broadcast, and it just struck me how many parallels there were between our individual journeys. He was 58 when he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I was 58 when I was diagnosed with PTSD. He had onset about 12 years earlier while he was on active duty. I learned after my diagnosis that I had been in my 30-year career living with PTSD for at least 20 of those years. And the military medical system that we really were a part of for our entire adult lives just didn't catch it. There weren't the assessments in place to test for it. And that was odd, especially for two soldiers like he and I that deployed so many times and probably experienced some things that warranted that kind of attention by the medical community. So, you know, he had six evaluations at Walter Reed before he finally got the diagnosis for it on his seventh try. But that was after he had been fired. And he crashed, and he was spinning kind of out of control. So he had the wherewithal to ask for help, but so many people don't.
And he was directed to, right? Fired, was. and then told, "Hey, you better find some help." Very glad that he did. I read his book too. I read a little bit before, and then read it afterwards. After our interview with him, he really went through some extreme highs and lows. Definitely see some parallels there with his story and with yours.
Yes. And even though bipolar disorder is a little different from post-traumatic stress, you know, there are some parallels there. Both of them are stigmatized, and so it's very difficult to raise awareness, let alone engage in a conversation. So when this opportunity came to talk with you and Will, absolutely wanted to jump on it, because I backed into my diagnosis very much by accident. I had retired 11 years prior to that, prior to my diagnosis, for the last, I'd say six or seven years of my active duty military career, I was entirely focused on countering IEDs, those roadside bombs that really, really devastated our forces over there in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I didn't understand the impact it was having on my life until 2017, I was watching a YouTube video, a story of a Marine who had been blown up in his vehicle with three of his comrades on board. He was the sole survivor. And it was that video and the story of his recovery from that that I just completely had a meltdown. And that told me that there was probably something going on in me that I needed to check out. And I did. And over time, over the next 6 months after that, I learned that I had been living with post-traumatic stress for many, many years. And you know, in my
what did that look like? If you know, I'm going to just jump. What did that look like? Your PTSD, how did that manifest in your life or your relationships, your work, if you will?
Oh, beautiful. One of the things that I loved about Greg Martin's interview was his embrace of his diagnosis. I did exactly the same. It may seem weird, but, you know, when I learned that I had PTSD, I was excited. I celebrated it. I fully embraced it. And I ran toward it because suddenly the things that I had been dealing with or living with my entire life had a name. It had a name, and I could learn about it, and I could try to figure it out. I could try to understand it, and I could learn how to do something about it. And as it turns out, post-traumatic stress is we think of it as a disorder because that's the name that was attached to it, but it's not that. And I'd like to get into that with you, if that's okay, during this program. But
for sure,
how did it affect my life? Well, my professional career was fantastic. You know, the military is just a wonderful environment to become the best of yourself that you possibly could be. And I was, just like Major General Martin, a hard charger in the Army. I volunteered for the hardest missions, the toughest assignments. I wanted to make my difference. I wanted to push myself and stretch myself as much as I could. And, it took me all over the world. I saw some amazing things, but I experienced some tough things too. Professionally, I was doing okay, but on the relationship side, on the personal relationship side, I struggled. It was hard for me to get into healthy relationships, lasting relationships, and fulfilling relationships, because something would get triggered in me eventually that I would push the other person away, or I would get into something that was so toxic. And that, on some level, felt comfortable. But all of that started to make sense when I got my diagnosis. It's just amazing how a diagnosis, no matter how tough it is, can really turn the light on in terms of offering an understanding of what's been going on in your life all these years. Oh, that's what it was. I got irritable because of that situation. I had nightmares and flashbacks, and if you remember the military, and if you go into a restaurant and sit with your sit facing the door, you're hypervigilant, right? I didn't think anything about it. It felt like that was just who I was. Sure. Until I figured out it's not. And so with that diagnosis, I happened to be introduced by my wife. She was out on a run and called me and said, "You've got to listen to this guy. His name is Colin Tipping." Mm-hmm. And I never heard of him, but I listened to the recording, and I learned for the first time about this modality, this spiritual modality called radical forgiveness. And it blew me away. You know, we all have this idea of what forgiveness is. Many of us have learned it in catechism or Sunday school. But I was so turned on to this because it was not anything like I had been exposed to before. I learned as much as I could about it. I met Colin, had many discussions with him, ended up becoming a certified radical forgiveness coach.
There you go.
And it changed my life, because I learned through this kind of, I'd call it an advanced adult version of forgiveness that, you know, we're given a set of beliefs when we're very young, in our formative years, between the time we're born and the time we're 5, 6, 7 years old. And we don't think twice about them. We take those on as our own beliefs, our own values. They're given to us by our environment, by our primary caretakers. And they create a narrative by which we live our life. No one ever tells us really in our life that you can change your beliefs. You can change what you believe about yourself, about anything. And there's a process for doing that. And radical forgiveness follows that process. And what I love about this process is it works on your you're on a specific core set of limiting beliefs that we all walk around with.
Right.
And those limiting beliefs direct our lives. It directs our decision making. It directs the choices that we make. It often contributes to addictions or other things that we do to self-medicate, to just kind of escape the pain that we're in for a little while. But you can change that. And through this process, it absolutely changed my life. And now I wanted to teach others the same modality.
Sure, sure. Well, for that modality, for those who are not familiar, one, like, how do you define just the overall arching term, radical forgiveness? And what specifically, what do you mean about radical? And then how does that differ from the traditional beliefs or notions of forgiveness?
Yeah, they're very much on parallel paths, at least in the beginning. We all have a story. We all tell stories about our lives. We have memories of past events and that we tell stories around. And radical forgiveness is a five-step process, the first of which is to tell the story of an experience that we had that that we're still carrying around, the emotional investment in that story, and it's directing our life in some way. So the first step is to tell the story, and the second, closely in hand with that, is to feel the feelings of that story.
Yeah. Why is it important? Why is that first step? Like, why is it important to tell the story? What does that do for the mind or the body or the feelings or whatever?
Yeah. Well, because telling our story and being heard is really the first step to letting it go, to letting go of the investment that we make in that story that we're holding on to so tightly. We're making it an emotional investment in holding on to that story because it's so meaningful to us. Yet what we don't understand is what's hiding behind the story that limits our lives. And the radical forgiveness process in the second and third steps are all about feeling the feelings and identifying and actually naming those feelings. And then in the third step, collapsing our story so that we can start to understand what those feelings are actually telling us. A story, as it turns out, has two parts. There are facts about what happened, and then there are our interpretations of what happened. And the interpretations are based on the beliefs and the values and the stories that we heard in our formative years that we took into our life with us. That became our starting point. And we didn't think twice about taking on the beliefs and the values and the ideas and the judgments of our primary caretakers, our parents for most of us. We just made them our own. And we did that because at such a young age, it was all about survival for us, right? It was about fitting in and gaining love and acceptance from our primary caretakers. So we had to really suppress any questions that we might have had back then about the things that we were taught. We just took them on as our truth. But later on, it starts to show up in life, in our life experience, our lived experiences. And so if we have a tough breakup, or if we get fired from our job, or if we have a meltdown of some kind, or a health condition of some kind, Colin Tipping did a lot of work with people struggling with cancer. It's because we are carrying around beliefs that just are not serving us. And so the third stage of radical forgiveness is all about collapsing the story, kind of decomposing it, taking it apart, identifying what the facts of our victim story is. We were victimized somehow in the past, and this is what happened. So these are the facts. My relationship ended. I got divorced. I lost my job. I got sick. And then there are our interpretations of what happened. And our interpretations are linked to those core limiting beliefs that we carry around with ourselves. I'm not good enough. I'm whatever the limiting beliefs are that are true for you, that are thematic in your life, that come up again and again. I'm too old. Yeah. I'm too young. I'm too fat.
Yeah, this is the way things are, right? Resignation.
Yes, the way things are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And once you start to identify the core limiting beliefs that are driving that story, that narrative, then you learn you don't have to hold on to that. That's just an interpretation. And in fact, it's not true. It's not a fact, right? And therefore, if it's not a fact, then it's just an illusion. It's not true. And so that is by itself can be a breakthrough for a lot of people. And it was for me. I learned what my core limiting beliefs were. And then when I discovered I can change them, I can change what my core beliefs are and replace those limiting beliefs with something that's more aligned with where I am right now in my life and who I am and who I aspire to be, then it's a matter in the fourth and fifth stages of reframing the story, learning the lesson from that past experience, and then integrating the new beliefs into every cell of your being to create a new narrative that guides your life.
For the forgiveness, and we've talked about this on the show in the past a little bit, but just broadly, why is forgiveness so important for humanity as a whole? And then what does forgiving do for us psychologically, physiologically? What does it do for us?
Yeah, the premise behind radical forgiveness is that all forgiveness is self-forgiveness. And I truly believe that. You know, we often go through life blaming others for our situations, for our lot in life, for why things are going on the way they are going on right now. Not knowing that there are lessons contained in those experiences that we are here to learn and to grow from. And by growth, I don't mean just growth as a human being. I mean, this is a process of remembering who we are, who we were created as, and returning to that authenticity where we live our best life from. And so the whole idea of forgiveness and why we need it so much in humanity today is we're so busy pointing fingers at each other, not realizing that the blame game, whenever we blame someone else, we're really giving our power away. We're giving away the opportunity to heal ourselves, to heal from within, and to start seeing the world a little bit differently, as not as threatening, and as something that we can embrace and serve on a higher level.
Well, one thing I've really been hearing, I don't know why it's, I mean, I've know this term, it's called Omar Fati, love thy fate, right? Or accept thy fate. Like, why is this such an essential part of radical forgiveness? I mean, I guess it has something to do with obviously taking responsibility, but it's beyond just responsibility. It's just like, this is where I am. Could you just kind of walk us through, you know, this piece of Omar Fati accepting the fate of where you are, what you are, and how things are going?
Yeah, this is where faith comes in. And by that, I don't mean faith in a religious sort of way. It's very possible to have faith without any religious connotations. Any athlete, any elite athlete employs a lot of faith when they do their craft. Simone Biles, for example, when she's up on that balancing beam and does this backward flip, she has faith that beam is going to be there when her foot lands, right? The same is true from a forgiveness standpoint. And this is where a little bit of the woo-woo part of radical forgiveness comes in.
We love woo-woo.
Yeah. You know,
John didn't initially. I was the woo-woo guy. And I think John's a little more woo-woo than me now. I got to just kidding. Sorry.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of growth since the retreat last year, even. So.
Awesome. There you go. Now,
so, you know, the idea behind radical forgiveness is that we're all spiritual beings having a human experience in a human body. We were made perfect. We will return to where we came from before we came into this world. And that before we ever came here, we made a soul contract to come into this incarnation to experience certain things, to learn certain lessons. And we learn those lessons for the purpose of remembering who we are, remembering our divine nature, remembering really our perfection, our goodness, our authenticity. And we sign up for these experiences. Often we sign up with the people that we struggle the most with to have these experiences. And they're mutually beneficial for both of us. So, you know, I'm not ashamed to say I had a relationship that ended. It broke my heart. It took a long time to recover from it. But that person and I, from a radical forgiveness standpoint, made a soul contract before we ever came here saying, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have an experience where you get your heart broken and and then you can figure out who you are in that process and come back and become a radical forgiveness coach and serve others to learn the same kinds of things.
There you go.
Right. I like it.
And so we come and we fulfill that soul contract because there is a divine nature to us. I firmly believe that. Yeah. That is fully in charge, that is fully intact, and that is unharmed by anything that we experience in our physical life, in our physical incarnation. And so we're here fulfilling that contract with each other and ourselves to become a better version of ourselves.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes really good sense. I mean, it's like... Yeah, what's that movie, John, about the soul? You know, the kids' movie. Yeah, Soul.
I've been thinking about that the whole time. Have you seen that, JP?
I have.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. Pixar, right? It's very, very true.
Fantastic.
Yeah. You know, and even I studied Joseph Campbell for a while, and he talks about some stuff like this. It's like, you know, when we come back, or if reincarnation's real, whatever, like we come back and now we're here to do something else. We're here to walk on a different path, you know, in a different form, but also here to achieve, you know, greater happiness, greater, you know, contribute to the world and, you know, eventually, live into Atman or live into Nirvana or live into, you know, full liberation over time, over lifetimes as well. So, let's go deeper into that energetic level. Like, so this is where the forgiveness really begins and ends and starts and rewires, is that this energetic soul level. Can you just, you know, you kind of talked about faith a little bit and divine intervention, if you will, or kind of divine connection to all things, and how divine, you know, kind of is, works with us, for us, you know, and is always there. So to talk about like the energy part, like why is it on that level and not just dealing with, you know, the story in your head and just kind of deconstructing it?
Yeah, because the story is simply a story. It's something that we can easily intellectualize without attaching emotion to it. But that's where we kind of stray off the path that we're intended to be on, because our emotions play such an essential role in our life. They're our guidance system, really. And I don't really subscribe to the idea of negative and positive emotions. Every emotion has a role to play. Every experience that we have, every feeling that we have in our body is attached to some emotion. It just happens in my studying of this, we don't have a very robust vocabulary when it comes to describing our emotions. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what kind of gets us in trouble when we cannot accurately describe our emotions. So when we tell a story, especially a victim story of something that happened to us that might have been traumatizing or really may have affected our life in a really impactful way, if we separate the feelings from that story and just keep it as an intellectual exercise, it really blocks our path toward healing ourselves. Emotions are there because they tell our body something's going on that we need to pay attention to, that we either want more of when we have very happy, celebratory, positive emotions, or we want less of that where our life is going in the wrong direction when we feel a lot of guilt or worry or anger or resentment. It's when we hold on to anger and resentment and guilt. And, you know, if you're living with post-traumatic stress, shame is the base emotion that drives, that keeps post-traumatic stress in place. All of those emotions have a role to play. They're valid and they're meaningful, but we're not intended to hold on to them. We're intended to pay attention to them, deal with the situation, and dispose of them as quickly as possible, because our natural state is happiness. I believe our natural state is happiness and joy and fulfillment and life satisfaction. But so many of us get stuck in these negative self-diminishing emotions, and that's where we kind of get into trouble. And so the whole idea of forgiveness is about paying attention to those emotions, listening and trying to understand what our body's telling us, what our mind and body is telling us, and take the steps that are necessary to deal with that situation, take responsibility for it, and dissolve that emotion that is controlling our lives in a not so productive way.
The emotional intelligence, or the emotional vocabulary, yes, you mentioned.
Yeah.
I know that's definitely something I struggle with. And I recently had an experience with my little boy. Like, you know, he did what little boys do. He pushed his little sister and I got upset with him, but then I pulled him aside and I just held him. I was like, "Hey, you need to say sorry." And he's like, "No." And I was like, "No, you need to say sorry." And I sat there with him for a good half hour, maybe even longer, trying to convince him to say sorry. And he was upset, and, you know, he was flailing around in my arms trying to get away. And I'm like, "Hey, man, you're going to sit here until you say sorry." And then finally I was like, "Hey, you know, why are you not going to say sorry?" And he cried for a little while. And then he said, "Because it makes me feel weird. I don't like the feeling I'm experiencing." Or he didn't say experiencing, but he said, "I don't like the feeling I get when I say I'm sorry." And I was like, wow, that's actually really profound. And so I think that's what a lot of us get is we get these feelings associated with these emotions. We get secondary emotions, or we get actual physical feelings related to these emotions that we don't like. And that causes us not to say sorry. I mean, that's what the show is about, radical forgiveness, right? We don't want to say I'm sorry to people because it makes us feel less than, because we're embarrassed, because we fear something. And then we don't want to say I'm sorry to ourselves for the same thing. So what role, coming back to how you finished there, JP, is taking responsibility? Why is taking responsibility so crucial to the healing process?
Well, and if I could just add to what you just said.
Yeah, please.
It was a perfect example. Is, you know, we don't have a very good vocabulary when it comes to describing our emotions, because we don't have a very good relationship with our emotions. We're taught from a very...
Especially men. I mean, men especially, like women, you know, God, they are allowed typically to express their emotion, talk about their emotion, talk about their feelings. Men, it's just like, how much are you bench pressing? How many miles you do? Like, how many hours you working? You
know, that's all I care about, like, Will. That's all I want to know. Next time we talk about that's all I want to know.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. That's why my answers are short, John. I guess, John, I'm just kidding. But, so take us, you know, taking responsibility, please.
So, you know, we're taught from a very young age that some emotions are acceptable and others are not. I'm a devout follower of Gabor Mate, and I would recommend anyone follow him. He's a thought leader on trauma and trauma treatment and addiction. And I love what he says about the four irreducible needs of an infant child once they're born. And the first is attachment. They need to attach to someone that they can depend on to take care of them. The second is rest. They need to be able to rest from that effort of attaching to someone that's going to be their caretaker. The third one is the permission to fully express and experience the full range of their emotions. And it's in that third one, the fourth is approval. They need approval from their primary caregivers. But it's in that third irreducible need that an infant has that we start to learn to suppress those emotions that our primary caretakers say are not acceptable. If you ever were at school or with your parents and wanted to go to the bathroom and you raised your hand saying, "Can I use the bathroom?" and they said no, that's a very subtle example of an adult telling you to suppress some emotion that's coming up, some feeling that is coming up in that moment. And as you learn to do that more and more, we become detached from our ability to understand our emotions and then to respond in an intelligent, constructive way when we do experience them. And so part of the radical forgiveness process is having the freedom to express and experience the full range of our emotions, because there are meanings behind them. Every emotion that we have, every feeling that we have. For example, when I coach clients, I often ask them, where are you feeling this grief or this guilt or this shame? Where is it showing up in your body? What sensations are associated with this? And I give them a worksheet to link that feeling to an associated emotion. Because once you start getting in contact with your emotions, then more gets revealed to you about what the underlying cause of that experience was, why you experienced it, how you may have helped to create it, and that helps you take responsibility for your part in it, for your emotions and the way you're reacting to it. And really, that's an empowering act. Instead of blaming somebody, they hurt my feelings, or they messed up my lifestyle. By taking responsibility, we empower ourselves to deal with the situation and dispose of it so we can live our best life going forward.
Mm. Yeah, well, I have in the notes here, by sitting in this energetic, we're kind of captured by the story, right? And that story captures our feelings, it captures our mind, and we just keep kind of rolling through, the same experience all the time, like playing. We're going to talk about victimhood in a little bit. I'll have it on the notes here, but just kind of playing the victim and being the victim. But I have here, as I was watching some of Colin's work, mentioned earlier, he talks about, projections and self-reflection. And how do those two things work together? Like, what does it mean by projection, which I think is really key on this energetic level? And does self-reflection help, or how do they two tie together?
Yes. Yes. Well, self-reflection comes in very handy when we're projecting, and we don't know when we do these things. These are just methods that we have of avoiding confronting really ourselves ultimately about why it is that we're holding on, that we're investing energetically, that we're investing in the emotions and the victimization of the stories that we're holding on to. And humans use different ways to avoid confronting themselves. Projection is one. Mirroring is another. We are often with people in our lives who mirror aspects of ourselves that we don't like back to us. Whenever we're judgmental about somebody, whenever we have something critical to say about someone else, chances are very good that they are mirroring back to you an aspect of yourself that you are not congruent with. And if you don't know that you're doing it, then you, of course, can't change the way that you react to it. But the more you know and become aware, I'm projecting something onto somebody else. I feel uncomfortable about a certain situation, and I'm going to blame somebody else for it, or I'm going to make somebody else responsible for it, for the way that I feel. And they're going to be the ones that are responsible for helping me feel better, and it never works. It just is a recipe for perpetual disappointment in life. And it's when we start to recognize that, hey, I'm projecting, or just making the people that other people are aware, hey, why are you projecting this on me? That we can start to take different actions to deal with it. Instead of becoming reactive, we can become proactive at trying to understand the situation through a different lens, making different sense of it, trying to see how it connects to a limiting belief that I have about myself, and then doing the self work that's necessary to heal from that. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. Well, yeah. Do projections also? Sorry. So just the projection, the way that you spoke of it. But is there part of that projection? Is that like kind of brings ourselves forward into that same kind of way of being and the way of doing things? Is that part of it as well? Like if we see ourselves, you know, and imagine ourselves and keep telling ourselves, you know, mentally and emotionally that, oh, this is just the way things are or nothing's going to change. Yeah. Are we also projecting that into our life circumstances continually?
Certainly. And this is all part of the narrative that we took on when we were very, very young. And we really didn't know any difference. You know, when we're born, when we're in our formative years, we're like a sponge. We take in so much information from our environment, and we don't have the discernment at that young age to determine this serves me, this does not, so I'm not going to take this on. We just take everything on, and we take it on as our truth. And that's how we form a narrative that eventually becomes our identity. And it's very interesting. We're talking about projection or blame, which I associate very closely with projection. You know, when we're making somebody else responsible, it's giving our power away, but it's part of our identity. It's part of what has become our identity. And we are willing to fight to the death to hold on or to be right about what we consider our identity. It's when we're confronted with a situation that that really shatters our life, that really forces us to confront ourselves and to really say to ourselves, I can't keep living this way. There's something going on that I need to become a little bit more introspective about and figure this out, because I don't want to keep living this way. That's when we really start to create breakthroughs in our life and discover, you know, when we become more sensitized and aware of when we project or what happens when we blame someone in a given situation. In the context of my PTSD, dealing with my PTSD, you know, my wife and I have been on this journey since my diagnosis of healing. She has gone to almost every session.
Wow.
With me, and it has so strengthened our relationship because it has highlighted for us where we have tended to blame each other for things, project our pain onto them, onto each other, in certain situations. And by becoming more aware, awareness is the very first step to creating change in our life. And that's why I do this work. Not only learning as much as I could about PTSD and discovering it's not a disorder, it's an injury, just like you said at the beginning. Gabor Mate calls trauma a wound. Mm-hmm. And guess what? You can heal a wound. We know that from our military experience. We can heal a wound, but the stigma around it is what keeps it in place. And it's what makes General Martner said this too. He said it so well. It's what keeps people afraid of it. It's what they don't even want to talk about it. But and that's what keeps them ignorant. I think those were the words and to the effect that he said. Right. It keeps them in the dark about what's really going on, so that we cannot raise awareness and open the door for change and for healing to happen. And really, that is the first step to coming back together as humanity, I believe.
Absolutely.
In such a divisive world.
And I want to touch on the PTS, quote unquote, deep piece, the disorder, yeah, the injury, right? I know we've talked a lot on this show about post-traumatic stress for military members, for veterans. Obviously, there's a lot of other traumas that are out there that can cause this post-traumatic stress and the injury that's associated with that post-traumatic stress. Over and above that, you touched on your wife going to each session with you. One thing that I learned is a term called secondary post-traumatic stress injury. And I wasn't aware of that until a few years back. And so I was married before, since divorced and remarried. And my first wife, bless her heart, she dealt with a lot of what I brought home from the battlefield. And I now, looking back, have learned that I actually inflicted secondary post-traumatic stress injury on my first wife because I wasn't able to understand what it was I was feeling, the emotions that I had, and then the way that I expressed it was very poor. And that came through in being passive aggressive, being quiet, being loud, being angry, almost to the point of feeling violently loud, verbally loud. And that inflicted this post-traumatic, or sorry, this secondary post-traumatic stress injury. So for some of our listeners, you may feel that you don't relate to what it is JP is saying because you're not military. Well, let me tell you, you haven't escaped this life without being exposed to some form of trauma, whatever that looks like. It might be something from the military. It might be something from your childhood. It might be something from a previous marriage. And everything that JP is talking about here with this radical forgiveness applies to you. And I don't really have a question there. I just wanted to put that out there kind of for our audience, for our community, rather. We learned last week, don't say the A word, because A word is audience. Hey, we're working to develop a community. So for our community who's listening, who's watching, this is for you. What it is that JP's putting out. So I'll get off my soapbox now, but I just felt that was worth putting out.
I really appreciate that because I've lived the same story as you. And really that's what excited me so much about radical forgiveness, because I was carrying a lot of guilt for, my actions and the things that I said and did in the past. I recognized, I've heard a lot of people. Let's just be honest with you. I've heard a lot of people with my words and my actions. I know that I'm a better person than that. And getting a diagnosis for post-traumatic stress was not something that became an excuse.
Sure. Yeah, great point.
But there was a way to connect the guilt with a potential cause and what was driving my actions and my decisions. And when I learned that it was a wound, it became, and that I could heal that wound, it became an imperative for me. If I want to be a better human being, if I want to serve at a higher level, if I want to live with honor and dignity and integrity, I have to do something about this. There are people around me that are affected by my behavior, by the things I say and do. And even though, you and I have been to war, you in a much more intense way than me, we both have families and they're not members of the military. And very, very little is said about families that are exposed to post-traumatic stress, that are exposed to a family member that is living with post-traumatic stress and how they are on the receiving end of many of the things that you just described. That was my life too. They deserve just as much consideration in the healing process as the person that's walking around with it. That guilt of suddenly realizing when I got my diagnosis, that was the root cause of that action that I took that I now feel guilty about, or that thing that I did, that mistake that I made, or that interaction that I had that I wish I could take back. It became an imperative for me to deal with it. And then as I learned and grew in this, I became more aware. There isn't a lot of awareness training, awareness talk, to raise awareness around what trauma really is and how we should be thinking about it as a society. I believe, for example, I believe it's an epidemic in our society. Just turn on the TV and the next mass shooting that we hear about, a person that is in his right mind doesn't do something like that. I believe most of the people that do that have been traumatized in one way or another, and they are acting out. And we've got to, I believe we've got to start thinking differently about that in our society today to bring about change.
Like Teresa Larson, our business partner and friend, she always says that with things like that and with our physical ailments, we need to get upstream, right? Like not address the symptoms, but find out what is causing those symptoms.
Get to the root,
right? The root cause. And I mean, what you just addressed with the mass shootings, we talk about, one, I don't want to give a blanket forgiveness for people who are doing that, right? But at the same time, their mental health is suffering, obviously, but what caused that? Was it bullying at school? Was it something, you know, in their childhood, in their family? Something caused that. And then again, for our community who's listening, you know, what caused what it is you're experiencing, whether it's mental challenges or physical ailments that could be caused by a trauma that you had, in physical or emotional trauma that you had in your life before. So again, no question there. I'm just talking a lot on this episode.
Well, good. May I say one more thing to add to that?
Please.
And this doesn't get a lot of airtime either. As I learned about trauma, I learned I didn't only have PTSD, I had complex PTSD, which means that I did experience some traumas as when I was a kid. And I got interested in that. And as I studied more about trauma, I discovered a type of trauma called generational trauma. And that is the wounds of one generation being passed to the next generation. And it's not done on purpose. It's not done consciously. It's done unconsciously. It's that narrative that we form in our formative years, right? That becomes our identity. It's got traumatic wounds in it that we take on as our own. It forms our belief in ourself, our identity, and we repeat the same things that happened to us.
Right. We learned about that quite a while back on another episode, and something that really blew my mind is that it can be passed genetically. If a mother is exposed,
epigenetics
through epigenetics, if a mother is exposed to extreme trauma when she's a young girl, that can be carried in her body, and she can pass that to a child without ever saying anything about it. She can pass the physical and emotional challenges that she's experienced to her child genetically, which is just mind-blowing to think about, but it also makes sense when you do think about it.
It does. Think about it from the context of our lives in serving in the military and deploying into combat areas. You know, when we experience an intense event, could be an IED blast or actually engaged in combat, or even secondary kinds of experiences, we have to keep functioning in that environment. We have to do it for our survival. It's part of taking care of the people that we're with and accomplishing the mission. Well, what do we do when that happens? We normalize what happened by suppressing the emotions around it, because trauma is really about an experience that we have that is so emotionally overwhelming that our body can't handle it. It's like we our circuits will get blown if we have to deal with it that moment. So we suppress it. We normalize it in order to keep functioning in that environment. What doesn't happen after a situation like that is when we're in a safe environment again, when we come out of that threatening environment where our survival is on the line, and then we come back and we're safe again. If we don't do the work to discharge that the emotions around that experience, we keep it in our body. And then we add to it as we have other similar experiences. Right. So to the point that you made about the pregnant mother passing along through her epigenetics to her child, her unborn child, some of those experiences. Yeah, absolutely. My mother and my father were children growing up during World War II. My dad was a kid in Holland. My mother was born and raised in Indonesia, which was a Dutch colony before World War II. My mother spent her childhood from 8 until 12 in a Japanese concentration camp.
Oh, wow.
That does something to you, right? So she fought for her life every day. But back then, and what a lot of people don't realize about trauma is trauma, PTSD was not an official diagnosis until 1980. And that means for my parents, they were among hundreds of millions of people that had been exposed to war and just had to suck it up and keep going. Right. And that was a recipe for passing their traumatic experiences onto my generation, the next generation. And that's how generational trauma works. Until someone comes along in the family, recognizes something's not right about this situation, it stops with me, and they start doing the work to heal that trauma. And so finding radical forgiveness was an amazingly effective tool for me to start dealing with some of the trauma that had been passed to me. Because in my experience as a radical forgiveness coach, this is a kind of a stat that blows my mind. Every one of my clients, the subject of their forgiveness work that they want to do is their mother.
Mm.
Everyone.
One of them. And that's a whole different topic, but that is a pointer to the fact that there is generational trauma that might be in the mix here. And if you can open your mind and be and consider the possibility that the trauma didn't start with the parent, that right. they too received from a generation before them
sure.
wounds and injuries that hadn't been dealt with, well, suddenly it doesn't make a lot of sense anymore to blame your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that opens the door to taking responsibility for your life, no matter what happened in the past, and doing the work now in the present moment to disinvest that emotional to disinvest from that story that you've been holding on to and the emotional investment that you've made in it, and holding on to the blame and anger and resentment to the perpetrator of what happened to you. Because that you start to learn through radical forgiveness, I'm just giving my power away to that person. I'm not able to live authentically. I'm not able to heal. And the more energy I'm spending on that, the less I have in the present moment to create my future with. Because that's the only place where we create our future is in the present moment. It's the only place we decide our happiness
right.
in the present moment.
Yeah.
But if our thoughts are parked in the past, we're taking away from ourselves. And it's all about us. That's why self-forgiveness, that's why all forgiveness, I believe, is self-forgiveness ultimately, because whatever happened to us in the past that we are resenting or holding on to anger about is over. That event is over. And the past, as you know, you can't change the past.
Right.
No.
We hardly can affect the future. But we worry so much about the future and we have so much anger and resentment about the past that we don't have a lot of energy left over in the present moment with which to create our future. Right. And so radical forgiveness is about reclaiming that energy that we mm-hmm. spend so much on worrying about things that might happen in the future that we have no control over, regretting and feeling guilty and ashamed and resentful about in the past that we can't change, and redirecting that energy into pursuing a future that is full of joy and happiness and life satisfaction. We deserve that.
Yeah, one thing that really helped me change the relationship to my parents, and a little shout out to my dad, he's 85 today. April 3rd.
All right. Happy birthday.
I know, right? But one thing that really helped me shift my relationship to my parents and also real other people as well, especially my parents, it's like, you know, they did the best they could with what they knew, how they were raised, right? The trend, you know, the generational trauma that was not only were they born with, but that generational kind of trauma is also how we're taught as kids. Like, you know, we're being taught from that place of shame or loss, yes, or, you know, what, or guilt or something like that, you know, and that just comes through, you know, subtly, well, not so subtly, but like, it doesn't seem like it's coming through, but like that, if that's the energy that we're, the emotion that we're, as our foundation, you know, from our trend, from our generational trauma, like that's how we're being raised with this guilt and with the shame and educated as well. Yeah, it's like, but it helped me with my parents to just realize, you know, they did the best they could. I mean, they didn't, you know, I had a great grandmother and, you know, a wonderful grandfather as well. And but I wasn't there when they were going through their lives, you know, with them. And, you know, especially the men, like, you know, we're starting to change the conversation, Men Talk Mindfulness, and with the work you're doing, JP, with Radical Forgiveness, to change the conversation for men and everybody to kind of get more in touch with those emotions, develop that emotional vocabulary, and really start to pull yourself out of this, like, victim land or victimhood. But it takes like one step at a time. Speaking of time, we're actually coming up on time right now. So what's like one, you know, message that you like to leave with our listeners with regarding the power of forgiveness and kind of healing some of these traumas that we've been talking about?
Oh, wow. Well, I echo what you just said, Will. I have a lot of empathy and compassion for my parents, because I know, I learned they did the best they could.
Right.
And
right.
they made their transition from this life not knowing that they probably lived their entire life full of PTSD.
No.
They never got treatment. They never got diagnosed. They did the best they could. I have a better understanding of this now. And so my mission is to support those, especially service members, but anyone who's a victim of abuse, dysfunction, or neglect. Those are really the sources of trauma. Heal that. There are some amazing modalities for healing your trauma, for finding forgiveness for the emotions that we feel and the core limiting beliefs that are directing our lives. And I would just say, allow yourself. Radical forgiveness does not require that you believe anything. All it asks is to be willing. Be willing to consider the possibility that there may be a different interpretation of the stories that you're holding on to so tightly.
Wow.
That are limiting you from experiencing the fullness of who you really are. And just be willing and do the work. And, you know, the universe comes in, it's got its way of bringing the right people to you at the right time, just when you need it, to help you take that next step forward. And I know that you two are on a mission, you know, to raise awareness about the importance of mindfulness. I'm on a mission to raise awareness that trauma is not something that's a life sentence. It's a choice. You get to live with it, or you can heal with it. You can befriend it. I'm starting to coin a new phrase, love your shame, love your trauma. Because it's a part of you, the getting triggered and lashing out and the trigger responses, is they're all signs that your body's telling you, I've got a wound here. I need your help taking care of it. I need your help healing it. And becoming introspective and doing the inner work of healing, is significantly beneficial and satisfying. And it can really lift you out of a mindset that is fixed, and especially fixed on the past, and help you develop a growth mindset that takes you into a new future, takes your life in a completely different direction toward the deepest desires that you have for your life. It's absolutely attainable, and all you have to do is be willing and do the work. The universe will take care of you and carry you along the rest of the way across the finish line.
Awesome.
Yeah, trust that divine. Yeah, trust that, you know, divine. Yes. It's you know, and when you do fall into the hands of the, or fall in or accept or kind of, yeah, or allow yourself to fall into the hands of the divine, you know, however you want to define that, like, there really is something there. I mean, from my own experience with John, and obviously JP, you've had it, but it's like, you just need to kind of just trust. Just trust, like, the brilliant, perfect design of all things. And we're here to learn, whatever those our circumstances is, or the difficult person that's right in front of us. There, everything is our teacher. We just live in a giant classroom. And what's really empowered me when I, embrace that mindset, like, I really start to see life in a different way. And stop.
And it doesn't have to be religious, right? It's not.
Right.
It's not necessarily. You don't have to be a religious or even a spiritual person. Mm-hmm. You just may think of it as your higher self, the best right. you that you can possibly be, and live into that. Do the work that's required to live into that, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
mindfulness exactly. and forgiveness, and having a growth mindset is all part of the program. I think that's where our missions kind of intersect and complement yeah. each other.
100%.
Yeah, for sure. Well, hey, JP, if people wanted to learn more about you and the offerings that you have out there as far as courses, training, coaching, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, John, on Facebook as well. And I have a website, johnpauldelange.com. I'm just wrapping up developing an online course I call the Fulfillment Formula. I believe that it's going to be a game changer in terms of helping participants identify their deepest desires and doing the work of creating a growth mindset, making peace with their past, envisioning the life that they want to have, and then developing the skills that they need to actually make it a reality in their life. And whether you're living with trauma or not, everybody deserves to be fulfilled. I believe that those of us who are just chasing success, you know, just more money, more power, more things, more responsibility, we're selling ourselves short if we're not chasing after fulfillment, which is more happiness, more peace of mind, which is what you are such a proponent of, more inner peace, more contentment and life satisfaction. This program is designed to do that, and you can learn more on my website or just reach out to me. I'd love to talk with you.
Right on. Well, we'll definitely make sure that's in the show notes and well, send that you. Out to our community as well. And, you know, talking about the community, for our community, thanks for tuning in, those who are tuning in live and those who are, you know, tuning in later during the podcast. We appreciate you. And if you got something out of this episode, please share it with your friends, your family, your colleagues, whoever you think could benefit from hearing it. And then subscribe to our YouTube channels, follow us on all the various social medias. And now, we're going to wrap it up in a nice bow with that ending grounding practice to wrap it up. So if you're tuning in, let's tune in to our bodies right now and do that by let's just start by paying attention to the physical sides of our breath. The inhalation and the exhalation. And during this conversation, you may have heard some things that made some physical feelings or some emotional feelings bubble up to the surface. And if that's the case, just be aware of them. Don't judge those feelings. Don't judge those emotions. Be aware of them and be curious about what caused them. Take a look at them, sit with them. And just soften your mind and your heart about these feelings and these emotions. And just in sitting in this silence, You may have noticed that your mind wandered off. That's okay. Just bring it back to sitting with these emotions, with these feelings. Now we'll start to wrap it up. Wrap it up together with three deep cleansing breaths. Begin with exhaling. Nice deep breath into your belly first. Then into your chest. Hold and release. And as you release, try to release those feelings, release those emotions without any judgment. Holding empty at the bottom, deep breath in. Into your belly first, then into your chest. Hold and release. Again, releasing those emotions and those physical feelings. Holding empty at the bottom. One final deep breath in. Into your belly first, then into your chest. Hold and release. And as you release this time, start to bring some movement back into your body, rolling your shoulders, wiggling your fingers, your toes. If your eyes were closed, start to blink them open. And thank you, everybody, again, for tuning in. JP, thank you so much for being here with us today. Fantastic episode. Thank you for sharing what it is you've learned mentally and emotionally. We really appreciate it, brother. So I'll turn it over to Will.
Thank you, JP. And for those that are only listening, JP, towards the end, he has exposed his T-shirt and says, "You are enough." And everybody is. And if you don't feel you're enough, then I would really dive into a lot of the work that JP is doing, because he's going to help you understand that you are enough through radical forgiveness and also through his Mentalk and Mindfulness hat on.
So, looking good, man.
Yeah, right? You're looking perfect. Perfect, ideal guest. thank you, JP, for all your time, all the great work you're doing in the world, and everybody out there listening, one of our wonderful growing community. thanks for being here. Share this with your people. Text us. If you want to learn more about everything we're doing, 33777. And that's it, John.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Can't wait to see you next month.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Until next time. Take care, everyone.
Peace. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you walk away with some new tools and insights to guide you on your life journey. New episodes are being published every week, so please join us again for some meaningful discussion. For more information, please check out mentalkingmindfulness.com.